You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 15 September, Chinese house price index year on year down another 2.5%. Since May 2022, there's been only one green month. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Nekunza Sanlam Private Wealth, Caxton Results, a small little stock, but the market cash is what, three quarters cash market cap. And then City Lodge Results, occupancy drops, but they were doing refurbishments, but that stock's just gone nowhere. Best left alone or opportunity. Gerard Smit from Stonehag Fleming Investment Management. Mag 7, growth outstripping the rest of the S&P 500 and a stock they found really exciting. And Dr. Rulof Buerta, the second quarter Afrimat Construction Index, a bounce quarter on quarter, but we are negative year on year. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, $20 billion V&A Granger Bay expansion begins with basement build prep work. Growthpoint co-owned precinct kicked off with $300 million in development. Bloomberg US-China talks head to second day focused on trade and TikTok. Remember, they still want, the US wants China to sell TikTok. Morning markets, the US was mixed. S&P was down, I think, 3 points, 0.05%, while the NASDAQ was up 0.4%. The East is mostly red. Sydney's up 0.4%. Tokyo closed. Respect for the aged day. Hong Kong actually up a third and Tencent down a tenth. Commodities are mixed. Gold futures is red at 3,668. Brent green, 67.35. Platinum also green, 1,408. And palladium lower at 1,219. Rand, 17.36. Bitcoin, 115,400. And top 40 opening call, red open, 140 points or 0.15%. Down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Nekunza Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. Late Thursday, we got the results out from City Lodge. Lots of moving parts there, in large part also, I mean, doing refurbishments, which took a lot of stock out and I suppose benefits them at some point into the future. Occupancies was down, but perhaps we can blame the refurbishments on that. Your thoughts on it? It is a stock, I mean, as I zoom out, I mean, it's gone almost nowhere since early 2022, sort of trading between 4 rand and 5 rand.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Morning to listeners. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one, City Lodge, isn't it? I mean, it's, as you said, pretty much gone nowhere the last few years. It's always been around about 3 rand something, 4 rand something. But if you look a little bit closer and you do zoom into to the last year or two, it's, you know, the stock is down 21% year to date. So maybe that just reflecting a, you know, they do concentrate quite a bit in the business sector. The business travelers were a large portion of the business over the years, and maybe that does speak to a larger problem with the slowdown of growth inside Africa, specifically the business sector.
I take your point, because I mean, Sun International doing better certainly over the period, but for them a lot of that is, of course, is gaming, as distinct from as you say, business travel, which is perhaps the telling point.
Yeah, it is. I mean, completely different. No, I mean, this does not have any access to gaming, any of the other sort of leisure activities that are associated with some of the other hotels. So it really is just about the accommodation. I mean, it's worth noting, though, that, you know, occupancy, as you pointed out in the intro, did slip to 56%. Mm. It is one of those sort of unique, hotel chains that is actually still profitable around these levels, which shows how close they cut it. But nevertheless, they've got to get a pickup in their local economy to get another step up. But I do think they have put most of the hard work behind them, and the debt has also been cleared with that rights issue a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right. A massive rights issue. And of course, they're doing food and beverage these days, a lot more in that space, which helps. Caxton, a small stock, a 4 billion market cap. I think one that probably, I mean, I have to be honest, I peek at it occasionally. What really struck me for the numbers weren't bad, but 3 billion of cash worth 4.4 billion market cap. And I always look at that and think, oh, this is juicy. And then I remember sometimes there's just value traps. I mean, is this one you've looked at usually? Thoughts on a giant cash pile?
It's quite difficult to dissect because, as you said, it actually plays in a bit of a unique space. There's nothing quite like it on the JSE. And when I was looking at doing a little bit of homework on this morning to chat to you, I was just thinking it does remind me of one of those sort of old-fashioned conglomerates, you know, those different business entities which are almost completely detached from the parent company. You know, so that, but they are, you know, traditionally a paper business.
Yeah.
And they're now sort of branching out into, I mean, they were community papers, I mean, originally, but they're now branching into the packaging businesses, which is now quite a big share, stationery and the like. And of course, you know, they are quite a major investor. There's a bit of a, I guess, a little bit of a soap opera with that Impact packaging business a couple of years ago. They knocked heads there. But overall, not quite sure what they're going to do with the cash because, I mean, a business like this, it does sort of play in a unique space. You know, where do they go? I will say this, Simon, it is dirt cheap. I mean, it's trading on a P of 6 and the dividend yield is almost the same. So, yeah, it could be a value trap, but certainly your downside is limited here. You know, they're not very few businesses that are completely debt-free and sitting with cash on the JSE right now. Yeah. Which is what does Mr. Moorman and his team do with it? That's the question.
That's the trick. 3 billion cash, what do they do? And maybe that's what we're waiting for as investors. Some signal for that. Maybe it's the Impact, but that saga has been going forever and a day. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning. Our poll today is back to the City Lodge. Is local leisure still worth investing in? A lot of it has become the gambling side. Nick's point there, the sort of occupancies, the hotels, it's tough out there, particularly if your focus is business. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Gerrit Smit, Head of Global Equity Management, Stonehage Fleming Investment Management. Gerrit, appreciate the time today. You put out a note recently talking around the sort of market volatility we've seen and how it, in many ways, it's kind of hidden some of the opportunities out there. And in particular, you referred to the Magnificent Seven, that forward price to earnings ratio, about a 30% premium to the rest of the S&P, that's Bloomberg data. Some might see that as, I don't know, expensive, excessive, but it's actually below the longer-term average premium of around 60%. These stocks perhaps aren't as expensive as they have been or could be.
Hi, Simon. Yeah, they are more expensive because, in my view, they're worth it.
Mm-hmm.
We all know we're living in this incredible era of the so-called fourth industrial revolution, of which AI has now become quite a large, if not a dominant consideration. And the growth potential in AI alone, we perceive to be roughly third each year on average for the next 5 years or so. And within that, obviously making the right choices, one can have very solid earnings growth, but along with that, the important point to make, with the right choice, you can also have very strong free cash flow growth, which we haven't had with the dot-com bubble. So that's really important. Yes, we're living in very interesting times with very good choice.
I take a point, particularly in free cash flow. In the dot-com era, as you say, there was no cash flow, free or otherwise, at some points. But if we look at these giant stocks, we look at the Metas, the Alphabets, the Amazons, etc. of the world, they do generate money hand over fist, which, I mean, Apple, which is maybe not AI, but they're certainly fourth industrial revolution. They're doing share buybacks. We're seeing the Alphabets, Microsoft, they're doing massive CapEx spends on AI chips and the like. They do generate huge cash and they are growing. I mean, they're expecting 25% earnings growth compared to a market of just 7% in the year ahead.
Exactly that, Simon. And a very important point to make is within Microsoft, and Alphabet, Google, and Amazon, AWS. Obviously, we've got the world's largest cloud businesses. And most of this technology-driven growth, and obviously specifically on AI, that goes through the cloud businesses. And cloud is very profitable and very cash generative. In those particular companies, you have that cash flow generation, and therefore they have the capital to spend the money to build the data centers.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult for others that haven't got that cash flow to compete with them. Obviously, it's more expensive for others to create that capacity because they have to most probably borrow money, while these companies have got the cash on the balance sheets along with the free cash flow from the cloud businesses. So that's really key in these so-called hyperscalers. Yeah.
And that's actually a great point I hadn't thought about. I mean, part of their competitive advantage is their size. Part of their competitive advantage is almost in a sense that they were early to the process. They're not coming to this suddenly now and trying to generate and find the cash, the returns and the like. I want to change track slightly. In the note you put out, you spoke around GE Aerospace as one of, and I think you're quoted as saying, you know, one of the most exciting or optimistic you've been in a business in an age. This came out of General Electric. And it's, I mean, we know the business. It powers most of the airplanes that are in our sky. But the real interesting part of the business here is that for them, it's actually maintenance, perhaps more than the new engines, which is a different way perhaps of looking at it. But an airplane engine in an airplane needs a lot of high-quality maintenance at fairly regular intervals.
That is absolutely key in our choice to buy GE Aerospace. They've got three-quarters market share of narrow-body commercial flights in the world. Let that number sink in.
Yeah.
So that's over 70,000 turbines that have to be serviced. That's predominantly in most countries by regulation. Mm-hmm. And obviously a servicing contract is not capital intensive at all. It's pure cash flow. And just looking back at the, call it the old GE, that is what Jack Welch, that many of us remember when he built up the conglomerate in General Electric, he used that cash flow to build up other businesses and amongst others, even a financing business. Now, his second successor has unbundled all of the other assets. So we as GE Aerospace shareholders are now going to get all that cash flow from those servicing contracts in both the forms of share buybacks and in dividends. And we won't be surprised if their dividend growth can be in double digits for quite a while.
That is, I mean, it's a staggering number. I mean, 75% market share is absolutely staggering. We'll leave it there. That's Gerrit Smit, Head of Global Equity Management, Stoneegg Fleming Investment Managers. Appreciate the time.
Give your money smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Roelof Botha, Afrimat Construction Index came out this morning for second quarter. Roelof, always appreciate the early morning chat. In one sense, a good number if we look at the quarter and quarter, strong rebounds up 6.8%. Year on year, however, not so great, actually down 4.4%. Do we look at the quarter on quarter and think maybe we're getting a new trend? How are you reading it? Because it is it's sort of a sense of two different parts as to how we measure over what period.
Yes, obviously a sector like construction, which is both capital and labor intensive, has been battling as many other sectors as well with the high interest rates, ridiculously high interest rates. Central banks all over the world have been castigated by the so-called post-Keynesian economist, especially Joseph Stiglitz, who has reminded them that the oil price shock, which occurred shortly after the COVID pandemic, which Brent crude increased by 400%, inter alia due to the Russian military invasion in Ukraine. And of course, the sea freight charges, which increased 1%. This has never happened in the history of the world, that you've had this type of price shocks impacting on transport costs, etc. And as Stiglitz has said, how can higher interest rates fix this? And we've been severely quartered. The index is for the second quarter, so we haven't been able to capture the latest interest rate decline in July. So with a bit of luck, we'll see a further improvement in the third quarter.
Yeah, because we've also seen, and you mentioned the better bond index of home loan applications been moving higher. We're sort of certainly seeing some improved activity in the residential property market, and that should, I mean, all things hopefully will play through into the construction sector and into the AFRIMAT construction index.
Yes, from a low base, one could have expected indicators like the value of buildings completed that went up 21% quarter on quarter. Mm-hmm. But it's still way down on what it was before this overly restrictive monetary policy. The as Andre van Heerden, the CEO of AFRIMAT, has indicated, he says it's too early to really see what type of impact this had on the group. They were focusing obviously on Lafarge, 50% of Transnet approved quarries are owned by AFRIMAT. So they're looking good. They've also got a lower carbon cement product, a product in the market right now. Mm-hmm. So AFRIMAT, they are quite exciting, quite excited about the prospects for the rest of the year, especially, of course, what's happening at Transnet. I mean, this is terrific. In July, there were 100,000 more containers handled at our five ports than 18 months earlier.
Wow.
So there are some positive things happening with regard to the mm-hmm. cooperation between the public and the private sectors. But the public sector element in this newfound partnership is not as fast as the private sector, as we all know.
Well, yeah.
But it will happen. I believe it will happen.
Which brings me to my next question. Gross fixed capital formation by public corporations, constant 2024 prices. We were $230 billion back at 2013. We're inch above 110 billion. This to me is the most depressing chart I can look at on a Monday morning. We're just not building things as a country.
Yes, well, you know, our president has finally now acknowledged that one of the reasons, the main reason for the decay of local government in South Africa, I mean, more than a third of our municipalities are dysfunctional, it's because people were appointed not on the basis of merit. We are paying the price of a decade of state capture and cadre deployment under the previous president, Mr. Zuma, and his friends, the Guptas. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a little bit longer to get rid of that. The World Bank roadmap, which a government requested 2 years ago to get South Africa back to sustained high growth, was presented to government earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, one can spot that they're picking some elements out of that report, but they are, in general, they're very quiet about the report. And the report says very specifically, you have to change the management in the public sector because it's not on par with the private sector. With a bit of luck, they'll start, you know, pushing this agenda now.
I take your point, because, of course, this is all done at municipal level. I mean, they're metros, but a lot of it is also municipal. And as you say, if the municipality is dysfunctional, they're not going to be spending on any sort of capital formation projects at all. We'll leave it there. It's Dr. Roelof Botha, the second quarter AFRIMAT Construction Index. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We were chatting with Comrade Mapuani on Friday, talking the First Rand results. They were strong numbers, and the stock was up over 6% on the day. We asked if this was South Africa's best bank for investors. Just over half said, nope, there are better banks. A quarter said, yeah, you like it, but it is expensive. And certainly, aside from Capitec, it is the expensive bank. The rest were saying, yep, it is your favorite bank. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWare website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast
just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchlet, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, investing in art.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.